So, here we are, doing our first ever podcast for Rose, the first episode of the new Doctor Who.
Yes.
Or as I call it, season 27.
Or as I call it, season 1.
Well, you're sure I should call it season 27.
Sure.
Alright, are we ready?
Yeah, we're ready. We should probably introduce ourselves at this exciting juncture.
I am Michael Henderson, longtime Doctor Who fan. I've been watching Doctor Who since I was 12, and I'm now, well, older than 12. Much, much older. I've seen every episode that's available.
Hold on. Well, I'm Sarah Hadley, and I've not seen every episode that's available, but pretty damn close. And we're watching the opening credits here. Michael, tell us what you have to say about the
I missed the vortex with the face forming in the cloud.
Yep.
Maybe they just did it because they knew Eccleston would only be in 1 year and a day. We don't want to spend the money on that, so we'll just have their names.
Yeah, but it's still like a crappy logo, too. I mean, it's... Yeah. It's pretty, but that's about it.
I should remember I, sort of happened to see this episode before it aired on the old Tom Baker, credits, opening music. And I was kind of excited. I thought it was cool, but they didn't make it too far. It's good that they did that, and they need to put the face back in for season 2. So, excuse me, season 28?
Yeah, yeah.
Russell is listening, I know he is. He's like, damn, what do Michael and Sarah think?
Yeah.
Now you know, Russell.
So we already know that you and I, Michael, have different feelings about, you know, canonicity and season 28, season 2, that sort of thing.
He's the ninth Doctor, so.
Yeah, okay, he's the ninth Doctor. But so how early did you see Rose? Before its transmission?
Let me see. I believe it leaked onto the internet. I already leaked onto the internet about 3 weeks before it came out.
Okay.
And it leaked out, I guess, on a Saturday, because I went in.
A Saturday, you remember? Good.
Well, no, I just remember that I went into my inbox at work. I had to check my email. and I was like, I thought, well, I won't download it. I'll be good. And then, like, 3 people were like, if you don't download it, I'm just going to send it to you on CD. So I was like, well, I might as well download it then.
Yeah, it's sad. I mean,
yeah. I'm sorry.
So you saw it early because you were basically forced.
Yes, they held a gun to my head.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I didn't see it, they were going to ruin it all for me. Anyway.
Well, crazily enough, I saw it the night of transmission, thanks to certain connections, which I won't speak of, but I saw it about midnight after it had been transmitted, or it was midnight my time, which, you know, the nice people in England were all very, very asleep. And I forced my parents to watch it with me at about midnight, and I was so rambunctiously happy they went to bed, and I watched it twice more. It's crazy, and I guess probably one of the things that impressed me most, because, you know, Rose is not, it's not a complicated episode. It's really, really simple. It has no plot. It has a lot of humorous parts, a lot of good characters. Probably one of the bits that impressed me the most is Billy Piper, who I thought would be a really bad companion. And she's turned out to be really one of the great assets of the show, at least in my opinion.
Well, she's not here. But anyways.
Yeah, who is Michael? But you
know, Nicola, call me. Anyway. I'm sorry. This is what you're going to get if you listen to the rest of this. I'm just telling you.
Yeah.
This is how we always are.
Well, see, if Nicola calls Michael, that means I have Billy all to myself, and that's no bad thing.
So, you know, at this point, we should probably just say what's going on screen.
Yeah, Rose is in the basement, and she's calling for Wilson, and really probably don't care that much.
Why was it when she called for Wilson, I thought of that guy from Home Improvement standing behind a fence?
Well, I want to know why it's CEO on it for the longest time. I realize it's Chief Electrical Officer, not... Chief Executive Officer.
I thought even Stuart was having a bad month in the basement.
Yeah. Hey, boss!
You know,
basement?
I have to admit, when I first downloaded this, and of course, when you have it as a file on a computer, you have the ability to, of course, fast forward and rewind through it.
Yes.
I didn't want to fast forward to our first meeting of the Doctor.
Yeah.
So I felt like they did a good job of setting up, making you wait about 5 minutes in, according to the time run, so you still haven't found the Doctor. Which, you know, is his show.
Yeah, oh yeah. Not that Russell T. Davies seems to know that, but it is called Doctor Who. Not Rose Who. And here I'm revealing that I'm still bitter about the season finale, and I'll let that go.
Oh, by the way, if you're listening to this and you haven't seen all of the 27th or first season,
yeah, you need to go do that now.
Yeah, you might want to, you know, maybe know who Bad Wolf is for us. So, just so, ruin it for you.
Yeah, you need to go do that, because I'm going to reference later episodes. I'm sure Michael will reference later episodes.
And if you haven't seen all of the original Doctor Who, what the hell is wrong with you? You should have seen it by now. So,
anyway. You're a crazy person, because you're listening to us without having seen all that stuff.
Now, I did like the sound effect of the Autons, the plasticky, the kind of the crunching, weird sound that they make as they all move.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a particularly effective little thing.
Yep.
Now Rose is being attacked by plastic people.
Yeah, now the Autons, this is interesting, and it's interesting to know me, and one friend of mine.
There he is.
There's the Doctor.
Hey!
And they're running, which is
quite a lot.
Yeah, we all heard that a billion times before it aired, didn't we? A friend of mine, Ian, and I used to talk about what we would do if we brought Doctor Who back. And one of the things we used to talk about all the time was we wouldn't bring back old villains at all, except maybe in the first episode. And the big consensus we got to, and this was, you know, 5 years ago, was that the Autons would be a great villain to bring back in the first episode. So I just think it's, you know, great minds think alike, because here they are.
Well, I think it's easier to bring back the Autons.
I think
there's,
yeah.
There's no complicated backstory.
Right, they don't have characters, they're just sort of big zombies that kill people. And,
it's not like the Cybermen, where if you bring back the same guy, it's obviously that he's gained a lot of pounds. It's been 20 years since he died.
Right.
Oh, that type of the Cybermen.
No, the Autons are simple that way. Yeah. And, honestly, I think we learn more about the Nestine, where they come from, and what they do in this episode than we did in either of the ones in the Pertwee era. And you know, we still only learn, like, 2 minutes worth of information. This, as well as the fact that apparently the Nestines are now giant big blobs of gelatin. Squid creatures, yeah.
And Pertwee crossed his eyes. Which he was very good at. Let me do my Pertwee pressure.
Okay. Hey, you can't see that out there, but let me tell you, you didn't need
to. It's a good thing there's no video.
Oh! Run for your life, Rose. I guess he's telling us that.
I remember initially when this came out, when I first saw it, a bunch of people were like, the Doctor can't blow anything up. He can't be violent. They were very upset that he's getting ready to blow up a store.
Yeah, Lawrence Miles was pissed after this that he, you know, blew up a department store.
Also, I think Lawrence Miles is pissed just when he wakes up, just because he's had to wake up in the morning.
That's pissed in the American sense, and not the British sense.
Yeah. You know, I think I wonder sometimes when I read that he linked to.
Yeah.
He was kind of upset that he wasn't asked to write for the show.
I think he was upset, although he also said World War V was an incredible gem of television. So now this special effect here with Hendrix blowing up, there it goes. That is a really crappy special effect. I'm sorry. She's so obviously in front of a green screen. And I saw that thing again and again in every single interview. Like, oh, God, terrible. This little music sting right here, when we see the TARDIS, I know I've got
I haven't seen, I'll be honest, I haven't seen the completed version. So, like, I'm watching it again basically for the first time.
You haven't seen the completed version of Rose?
Well, I saw the preview copy.
Oh, it's exactly the same, Michael, except a little bit of music is too.
Yeah, well, see, I was getting ready to comment on it because I thought the music sounded a little too, in the first episode, too much like a video game.
Oh, it still does. Okay, there's just slightly less of it now.
I felt like I was playing, Alone in the Dark. You know, it's like, you know, or that I can have a submachine gun and be wasting everything. Oh, here's Mickey.
Yeah, there's still too much music in this, but there's, like, certain bits when the Doctor and Rose are talking before it's been removed. There's a nice little sting on that TARDIS moment, which is sort of, you know.
Well, it's a good set, but overall, I like it was too obvious.
Oh, yeah, I like some of the choral bits, but a lot of it is, you know. Like, okay. We get it now.
Apparently, Resolution's not coming from the lessons of the Sea Devils music.
Or the Silurians, or really.
Okay, I'm done.
Yeah, love that Pervy music.
And here's Mickey.
They kiss.
That's so okay. Rose, we were talking about this earlier, kind of obviously the slut of the show. Because let's think about this again. If you haven't seen all the episodes, we're going to ruin everything.
Yeah.
Okay, so later, Rose is apparently on some level attracted to the Doctor.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So she's hot for the Doctor. She's got Mickey, who.
We're not sure
not
why.
To be honest, I don't know what Mickey does all day except be on the internet and be bitter.
I do anything?
Now I think about it, Mickey could be Lawrence Miles.
Could be.
Anyway.
A young life. Yeah, okay. What does Mickey do? Do we ever learn?
He takes over for Clive for the website.
Yeah, he can't make money doing that, though. Anyway, maybe he delivers pizza or something.
Rose is here with Mickey. She leaves him to run off with the doctor at the end of the episode.
Yep.
She hooks up with Adam.
Oh, Adam, yeah.
Who we'll get to when we get to Dollard.
Yep.
She hooks up with Captain Jack.
Yep.
And you can't tell me that they weren't off in another room of the TARDIS, you know.
Oh, yeah, because we all know Kyoto, Japan. That's just a password.
Yeah. It's just a password for a hot, wild cookie. And then,
what? You said that, not me.
And then, later in Boomtown, Rose is, Mickey's like, Rose, I think it'd be fun to go to a hotel room. And Rose is like, sure thing, Mickey, that'd be great. You know, she's practically like ripping off her shirt there, which, again, if it was Perry, all good.
Yeah, I gotta mention at this point, that's one of the things that annoys me about Russell T. Davies. And, you know, I kind of give the man some flack. He is a good writer. I do admire him for bringing the show back. I think he's got a lot of ideas and imagination. But occasionally he just gets so wrapped up in the brilliance of his own dialogue and jokes, he doesn't realize what's appropriate. And, I mean, he goes on and on in interviews that this is a show for 8 to 12-year-olds. And I try to think about that when I watch it because, you know, Doctor Who was never sold over here in America really that way. It was sold sort of more to college-age sci-fi people who are probably equally immature, but whatever. I'm not sure a line about let's go get a hotel for the night is really appropriate for
or this here, where we're watching where Rose's mother is throwing herself at the doctor. There's a man in my bedroom. And I like this because you kind of, if you read the 8 Doctor Adventures, which were
the books,
making crap, where Sam was in love with the doctor and he just was completely
oblivious. Right.
And you can see here the doctor's just oblivious to Jackie, which you can see why. She becomes very annoying. I think Russell T. Davies loves some of the minor characters too much.
And oh, yeah.
Coming back, Jackie has been used enough, so Russell, if you're listening, you can write her out.
Yeah. She'd get hit by a truck at this point, basically.
You know, if she wants to die in the Christmas invasion, I'm all for it.
That might be a
and Mickey, you've done all you can with.
Oh, yeah.
You really
short of giving the man a lobotomy, Mickey's over. And I'm hearing rumors now he may become a companion in season 2.
Oh, God. The magic of the new show.
Here's the bit where the arm grabs the doctor by the throat. I actually really thought this was funny.
This was fun.
This was one of the funnier. And I'm going to say, although the show was humorous, I did not laugh out loud again after this episode, probably till the doctor dances, which has a lot of funny lines. This one really did make me laugh. Here, this is just funny. A lot of the doctor's lines are funny in this episode, too.
And meanwhile, Jackie dries her hair.
Yeah. But yeah, going back to the sexual dialogue thing, I do think it's sort of overkill in a lot of Russell's episodes. I mean, you know, sex is out there and stuff, but 8 to 12-year-olds.
I think Russell's trying too hard.
So yeah.
He's trying to make it an important show.
And when, it's interesting, if you watch his, well, if you see anything about what he did early on, he wrote for children a lot. And he seems to take particular glee in the idea that he can work in, you know, fairly dirty lines and things. It's in his children's program. It's odd.
Well, Bowling was a little too.
Yeah, but
if it wasn't quite, I don't think Bowling was quite as blatantly obvious. I feel like sometimes when Russell threw in dirty stuff like Neon Lightron, they're going, ooh, dirty line, you know, we're like, adults, pay attention here.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it's yeah, if Bowling suddenly turned to Rocky, you know, Rocky, you want to go get a hotel? I don't think that
well. Well, they're both guys. That'd be a whole different subtext.
Do we know that Rocky's a guy?
I'm trying to think about it. That
he's got a girl's voice.
That is true.
Yeah.
Is this we're not to the Earth.
Not to the Earth evolving quite yet, but somewhere along around one of those blue garage doors, you can see who was a carriage. You can see an Alec. I think it might be the next set of blue doors, but yeah, it's a big white Dalek. Or as you call him, Michael. Dalek?
Daleks.
Did you call them Daleks?
I call them whatever.
Alright.
As long as they look right.
Yeah.
I'll call them anything I want.
I have enough friends
who call me, I'm just saying.
I have enough friends who simply call them Daleks, and I was so annoyed when both times we had Americans talking on this show, they called them Daleks, and I've been saying Dalek like an American over years and years. Yes, this is the Dalek. Nope. No Dalek there. He must have been on the other side of the doors, I don't know.
Not that it didn't see it anyway.
No, yeah, if you pause your video, you look real close.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we didn't ever tell them when to start the podcast, just to sync up with.
Well, you can kind of sort of guess.
We're assuming that you have seen this episode.
Yeah.
If not, well, we've given away the whole season, Battle of Worlds. So, you know, in case you're missing the first time.
We've said enough things. Like, basically, when Michael said, and here's Jackie drying her hair, Jackie was drying her hair at that exact moment. So if you're using a computer, you can go back and you can sync it all up and be really incredibly inane about it all. We'll do better on Dallas, I promise.
If you're going back to that much detail, it's really time to go outside.
Go outside and play, or possibly you know one or both of us. That's also
you're probably like,
oh,
these people are idiots. Why am I friends with these people?
Yeah, my dad suggested that, you know, we really should tell them how it is we met.
Yeah, okay. Back in when the
in 96, yeah. TV.
Where was it? It was on some bulletin board.
Some bulletin board.
If you want to have a Doctor Who party.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Or if you want to get together with other friends to watch the movie, there's the TARDIS.
Yep.
Post here. And yep. I posted.
And my little 12-year-old self responded.
And it was good that she brought her dad, because I was going, like, 12-year-olds come over to my apartment where I live by myself as a 23-year-old person. I'm like, no, that doesn't look bad.
No, my dad came, yeah. And of course I made an immediate impression by wearing my full doctor costume, which at the time was, you know, like a blue vest and a frilly shirt, purpley styled hat, and an umbrella and all that stuff. And didn't you think that's like how I dressed at first?
I just figured, you know, hey.
I was one of those special people.
I figured your dad would just like, you know, Sarah's a special person, and we going on with this?
Yeah.
And then I think your dad was just so relieved that you had someone else to talk about. And he was like, I'll buy them pizza every once in a while, so she'll shut up about it with me.
I think that's basically the idea, and I think Mother may have encouraged that, because Mother was getting really sick of watching Dr. Who by that point.
Well, you didn't have the benefit that I did, which is when you started getting into Dr. Who. You got into it about, like, 10, 12?
No, I got into it at 11, and...
I got into it about 12, when I was living in San Jose, where... KTH,
one of the greatest PBS stations ever, until they stopped showing Doctor Who.
They're no longer great.
Was the only thing that kept them from going off the air was they were in competition with the big one from San Francisco. One of the only things that kept them going and making a lot of pledge money was they showed Doctor Who 6 days a week, Monday through Friday, a single episode, and then Saturday nights at the full story in episode format the week I intended it to show.
That's a pretty sweet deal there.
So you could see through, and they also at the time had just bought. Hartnell and Trout, they had just gone back and bought the complete set. So you could watch pretty much the complete set in about 2 years.
Very nice.
So I came in and started watching Davison with Time Flight and having nothing to compare
Time
it to.
Flight.
I thought it was actually pretty good. Then I saw stories that were good and went, well, that really sucked. But I was able to see through all the complete stories at the time in about 2 years.
Very
so,
good.
You know, for free.
Yeah.
And now we're supposed to help. So I had that advantage, and then it was only after I'd seen through them all that I went, you know what, it'd be cool to tape them. And I was living somewhere else.
Begin again!
Somewhere else, and I had to take most of them in movie form. This is about the time they started commercially releasing them.
On video, yeah.
Yes, and I did it when they went to episode format.
Yeah.
Because I have them all taken in movie format. I have
You should know this about Michael. Uh-huh.
I have them all except for the last VHS box set, which I didn't know for some reason. I'm just too damn cheap to spend $125 on, even though I look at it and drill on it.
But you have some of the individual tapes.
Yeah.
I mean, because you cut them off of me.
Yeah, because I haven't loaned you my entire collection over the years.
That is true. So. Yeah.
Oh, here comes Mickey and the... No.
Mickey no, not Mickey.
Not yet.
Not yet. First so, five.
Mickey just sits in the car doing nothing.
Yeah, that's kind of Mickey's thing. He does nothing. So anyway, yeah, I got into it at 11 because my best friend Nick was like, oh, you'd love to watch this show.
Yeah.
Sorry, Nick, I'm doing a really lame impression of you. You got to watch this show. It's really great. And my dad had watched it when he was in college when it was running on Knoxville's PBS station.
I think it ran on, according, I had a friend in Knoxville who was also in a doctor. She was kind of strange, but she said apparently it ran for about a week and a half and then was gone.
No, he saw at least... all the way through Leela to Peter Davison's era.
Oh, okay. Because I seem to remember that there's always this story in the Doctor Who fandom of people who started watching when it first came on even sure is it that they thought Doctor Who only went robot through Invasion of Time.
No,
it didn't. And then all of a sudden they were like, oh, Invasion of Time. Episodes after it?
I finally had this confirmed. I knew Peter Davison had been the Doctor because my dad had said so.
Yeah.
And I had kind of, this is very strange, childhood memories of Tom Baker and Turlough. Not in the same room,
yeah.
Of course. But, because I used to watch it on his knee when I was about 2 years old, and we have this wonderful photograph of me Google-eyed watching Tom Baker. I had this finally confirmed by a guy many years later that Knoxville actually ran from Robot, which is Tom Baker, all the way up through Colin Baker, and then when it was done with, presumably some point with Colin Baker, it went back and went to the Pertwee episodes. We got a huge run of it.
Yes, because well, I started watching KTH, they were running Davison in the evenings, it was the summer, it was odd, and I had seen all the 7 original Star Treks.
Yes,
I like Star Trek. I like other shows besides Doctor Who.
So do I. Why?
You can start dismissing me as a non-Doctor.
Yeah, well. Now.
But I remember there was some excitement because they had just got the first Colin Baker show. And boy, howdy, they were excited.
Yeah.
And boy, howdy. Again, I had only just... The first Tom Baker I saw was Terror of the Zygons.
Okay.
The Saturday Night Doctor Who features were in the Tom Baker year.
Okay.
So I saw a lot of the Hinchcliffe years early and thought, well, those were good. Well, at the time, I really didn't have a lot to know that the dilemma was sort of crap.
Ah, that's pointed kindly, I think.
So I remember watching almost the first time and not seeing, not understanding why it was so cool.
Right.
Until we had to went through, and then it took, I guess it was about a year or so before we got Trial of a Time Lord, which KTH showed into giant 7-part Thursday. They did it on Thursday night, you know, and it was kind of one of those things that, you know, if you're like 14 and you only have one videotape.
Oh, yeah.
And they're also still showing episodes during the week. It's like, how am I going to cram in 7 episodes?
Huh?
I remember having sat in my lounge to buy a 7 videotape for myself.
You know what I saw, Tron? I saw it all in one day. All in one day on a Christmas when I was stuck in Baltimore in the hospital. And I nearly committed suicide. But,
and,
you know.
Speaking of suicide, we're back now, and Mickey is looking at the trash can, which is coming at him, which I really, you know, you think of a special effect, but I think this is probably the most
obvious
special effect.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, there's a bunch of them in this episode.
This one is just what he
approaches the trash can.
Agent Call is naff.
Yeah, it's very naff. Mickey examines the trash can. He makes an evil eye.
The trash can does not kill Mickey at this point.
Opens his trash can.
Meanwhile, now this was interesting. I liked Clive. I'm sorry that he dies later.
I like Clive, too.
Because you don't know, Clive is the internet obsessed Doctor Who fan.
Whom Sean Lyon really believes is based on him, which I think is kind of funny.
Anyway, I'm sorry. Moving on. Ian, please, give back the episodes. We want them. Anyway, I'm just saying. I'd love to see Evil of the Daleks, Ian. Maybe your friend.
We all know Trout saw it before he died.
Yeah. Yes. There is that story about how, you know, someone asked Patrick Troughton at the convention what his favorite story was, and he said, oh, Web of Fear, and they said, oh, from the 60s, he said, no, I just saw it over at Ian's the other day.
Web of Fear, which doesn't exist.
Yes. This is just an obvious special, and now Mickey is in the trash.
And now it burps. Yeah, there it burps. That's
with Russell T. Davies and Flatulence.
I have no idea. I think it's called Let's Write for Children, except he doesn't really understand how to write for children.
Well, let's see. Tom Baker years ago. See, I think...
He writes down to children. That, I think, is the problem.
You know, Doctor Who never talked down to the audience. In the 70s.
Until now. Well, really, until
and how thick is Rose? She's like, ew, Mickey obviously looks like a plastic person. I mean, the Ken doll has more life than Mickey does. But she's like, oh, Mickey, I don't know anything is wrong.
But pizza! What a crappy line. I have to say it. Much of the Mickey stuff in this episode is really terrible.
I think maybe this is maybe why I didn't like Mickey. He's so unlikable.
Overwhelmingly bad early on.
Which I think is probably part of the point.
Yeah.
But how self-absorbed is Rose? Because, okay, he's sitting here, he's not even blinking.
No. He's just got this wacky smile on his face. And like a giant plastic lacquer all over his head.
You know? And like his hair.
I know. I remember some people on Outpost Gallifrey trying to convince me that this was a big social commentary about how self-obsessed everyone is in our culture, and I was like, nah, it's just too deep.
You're thinking too much. Yeah. No. For those people who are often thinking too much about that, no. Kenda is not a Buddhist metaphor either, but I'm just going on.
It isn't?
I don't know.
Sarah and Michael.
So, anyway, yeah, I kind of showed
him. Meanwhile, the doctor comes in, pulling the wine.
You're going to interrupt my great story to tell me about the doctor and his wine? No, I was just going to say, I went to the Five Doctors when I was 11, thought it was fantastic, and proceeded to see various stories through the videos I could get with a $2 allowance.
Yeah.
And somebody lent me, like, the first 2 Hinchcliffe years in movie format. Things built up from there. And by 1996, I'd seen quite a few stories, and I saw your ad, and I ended up at your apartment with my dad. And that's how it went for a few years there. Dad and I would show up, we'd bring pizza.
Just about once a month.
About once a month. You and I would talk, Dad would go to sleep.
Your dad would be like, oh, we're watching.
Yeah. I actually said to Dad, he should come and be on this commentary with us. And he laughed, and then I suggested maybe we should just get a snoring machine to represent him and start it about 20 minutes in. That would be perfect.
I remember the food started because I would get off work and I wouldn't get home and you'd be like, and you guys would want to start earlier.
So that's right, yeah.
So you were just like, if we bring pizza, can we come earlier? And I'm like, we bring pizza, you can do whatever the hell you want.
Well, bear in mind, my bedtime was like 9. I was 12, dude.
Yeah. So, you know.
This was a constant battle. My dad was like, convince Michael to let us come early or you can't go at all. So I was desperate to find any way to maintain that one vital social contact.
So what you're hearing here, Nicole, is, you know, bring me some pizza. And I will love you forever. Like I already know. Anyway.
And Billy, I will bring you pizza.
That's what it takes.
And here we go, inside the TARDIS for the first time.
And this is nice. It's a little overkill with her running around, but it's nice.
Not quite the same. I mean, since we're working with Nick and doing our own little discussion of every episode, it's interesting to watch her discover the TARDIS for the first time as compared to we just watched last week, An Unfortunate Child, or as I call it, Serial A.
Yeah.
The first episode. Because that.
Well, the first episode is An Unfortunate Child.
And to see Ian and Barbara's walk into the TARDIS.
Right.
It follows them and it's the long pullback from their faces of, wow, this is really big.
Yeah, that's a cool moment. And this is a cool moment.
This took me a little getting used to in the new interior. I'll be honest, I was looking for paper plates on the walls with beans on
them. Yeah, me too. Honestly, I think I acclimatized to it quicker than I did the McGann one. Because although I liked the McGann console better, the actual console, I hated the huge room. I just hated it. There was a library and all these clocks. Why does the doctor have all these clocks? And, you know, even at 12 years old, I realized that was really stupid looking. And the huge file cabinets and everything. So I like this room better. I do kind of miss the pure brown walls.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if in season 28, if we will move out into other areas of the TARDIS.
Season 2.
Obviously, there has to be. Obviously, you know, Rose can't. They can't not ever sleep. I mean, we know the doctor.
But yeah, and we know there's a wardrobe because she goes off to it at one point. Not there's a door or anything, but
apparently, you know, I guess she and Captain Jack are, you know, doing it in the console room.
Well, there is a couch in the console room or a sofa or whatever you call it.
Even when the doctor standing there watching. I mean, I'm just saying.
No, I mean maybe that's where she sleeps.
Okay.
The doctor hangs from the ceiling or something.
Maybe we'll find out more of that next year.
They used to be the old joke about Tegan and Nissa, is there was one bed in Tegan and Nissa's room, so either something was going on, or Tegan used the bed, and Nissa hung from the ceiling.
Nissa, you could have done better. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, but Nissa got around, didn't she?
She
did. And then she got down to her underwear for her entire last story.
I'm sorry, what? We were talking about...
Yeah.
It's pretty sad, actually, that the thing that you remember about Nissa is Nissa was actually a good companion.
I do like Nissa, yeah.
But the defining moment of Nissa is her dropping her skirt.
Yeah. Well, it's just because they couldn't think of what to do with Nissa. She was too intelligent, I think.
That's half the problem. The Davis and companions had no idea what to do with them.
So originally, she was the one who, you know, really went best with Davis and all that original team, anyway.
And here's the Doctor and Rose, and also the TARDIS talking.
Yes. Yeah, we could actually talk about the episode.
Although,
I don't know, we've kept up the plot pretty good. I mean, it's like there are long, dull spaces, are there?
Yeah, we were worried, but that got into us.
Yeah, 2 hours ago, we were like, well, we'll have to add it down for all those dull, empty spaces.
So, we were past the world moving scene.
Oh, well past. We are
which
now.
Which I really liked. I thought, for me, that was really.
Yeah.
Which which I think works fairly well.
It does in this episode. I got a little tired of the instant solutions in later episodes, but it's fun for this. Again, this one has no plot. It's all character. It's all meeting Rose, meeting the Doctor, and that's fine. That's great.
Well, it's the basic plot of Spirit of Space without the Doctor spending three episodes
in
the sidelines with his memory gone.
I love this bit. It's kind of cheesy, but I do like it. And it goes fantastic, which, you know, at the time was very cool. Nine episodes later, we were really tired of fantastic.
Chris Kattan needs to get a new catchphrase.
Or two or three.
I'm sorry, whatever.
David Tennant. There's a joke online right now that, you know, his new catchphrase will be something like, you know, stupendous or something equally.
And here they are running through London.
Yeah, I think there was more music in that last scene in the preview copy, and that was like the big difference.
I think the thing we have got into, and we got into this earlier before we started recording this, was the direction.
Yeah, keep focused.
Maybe we should get into that since.
Oh, let's do that.
God. Not the best in the world. He must. I don't know if he's really good friends with Russell Davies.
He could have just been the first guy they were able to get. I mean, and no disrespect to Keith Boak. Maybe he's good at soaps or something.
It's just the pacing is off.
The pacing is way off. The pacing is way off in his other two episodes, which are Aliens of London and World War III, which we're not doing commentaries for because why, Michael?
Well, I mean, an hour and a half of us retching and vomiting.
Or, as Michael also pointed out, it could just be, you know, a single gunshot and then nothing else.
But then how would those ever get online? Because if we're dead, I mean, that is...
Someone will find the tape.
It's Aliens in London and World War II should have been a one-part episode.
Should have been, yeah.
I
don't know what it is with this pacing. It's really weird.
And I'm not sure even about... I want to go to his shot selection on some level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, camera movement, it's just not, it's not quite as fluid. It seems very obvious.
Yep.
Instead of
quite staging in places.
Which was, you know, worked in the Hartnell era because, you know... That was what you expected from the Hartnell era.
Sure.
You know, when I watch the Hartnells on the DVDs and the video, I don't expect a Kay's Vandersonic type of direction.
Sure. It's such great direction, too.
I expected it to be a little more fluid, and it wasn't. And maybe I'm just spoiled because I'm a Buffy fan, and Joss Whedon was such a good director.
I think we get it later. I think we get it in Empty Child of Dr. Danzig.
Yes.
I think we get it in Dalek. I think we get it in all Joe Abrams episodes.
But I just don't think, I think consistently he loves, they're okay.
They're okay,
they want to make it right home about.
Right. And unfortunately, I think that kind of, you know, reflects badly on the first episode.
Yeah.
I mean, kind of like your time flight thing, I guess, in a way you'd say, well, we can only go up from here, but...
I don't think Rose was all that bad.
No, I don't think so either. I just think the direction is very standard.
I just wonder if, was this the first episode they flew?
I think it was kind of like scenes for this and scenes for really the one.
I was just wondering if...
Yeah, these shots here of, like, the Ness team with shots behind the Doctor's back.
Yeah.
Those are really obvious green screen shots,
yeah.
Again. Particularly when the Doctor turns his head.
Yeah.
And then, oh boy.
But I also wonder if it seems like this one and the other ones that are directed by Bowen, the special effects scream out, look, we have more money than we need.
Sure.
And they're drawing too much attention to
this. And it could be simply that no one was quite sure what to do yet, no one was sure how to integrate those effects. Because if we saw them in production order, it might be clearer that the special effects and direction get better and better. Could be. I'm not sure. I know is, you know, this episode has, in my opinion, very obvious special effects. The next episode, End of the World, has somewhat obvious special effects. And The Unquiet Dead, the third episode, has really great special effects. So, you know, make that what you will.
And, you know, let me just say that as the fanboy that I am, in case you can't tell, let me listen to the first 35 minutes of this.
Oh, yeah.
And they did get it right eventually. I mean, the Dalek with the giant pullback with all of Shouting Exterminate is exactly the way to use digital effects.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
As Doctor Who fan, of course, you know that the BBC can't afford more than $2.
Yeah.
So you know that it's a digital thing, but it's not obvious, like this nesting consciousness is obviously a digital effect.
Yep.
And meanwhile, Jackie is
on the phone. Yeah, Jackie, a little bit of her goes a long way.
Now, wouldn't it have been better, cool, if the Autons had taken over? You know, one of the cool things in the 70s was about the Autons was that they could take over anything plastic.
Sure.
You know, remember how much of a ruckus Mary Whitehouse raised about Terror of the Autons?
The doll.
And I just think it was kind of convenient the plastic flower that shot up stuff.
Sure.
And destroyed it, and then it would disappear. How cool would it have been for the Autons to have taken over the cell phones and have them attacking me?
Oh, yeah. I think there's a lot of, unfortunately, kind of wasted opportunity with the concept. There was a book, and I really hate to reference the novels, but I've got to do it. There was a Sixth Doctor novel with the Autons in, where I think the big reveal on them was that McDonald's-style plastic toys started to come to life and kill people. And I thought that was just so great. Whereas this here, where the Autons break out of the shop windows, is trying so hard to be Spearhead from Space, but Spearhead from Space does it better. A lot better, in my opinion.
Well,
it's just scarier.
I really hope that Russell T. Davies wrote a nice check to Robert Holman and the state for basically just lifting all the good parts of Spearhead and Terror of the Autons.
Sure.
Recycling them here.
But I really was amazed that, you know, between the two, Spearhead's Massacre.
And there goes Clive.
There goes Clive. And that is, like, the one scary moment in the sequence. The Brides are okay, too. But seriously, Spirit from Space does it a lot simpler and a lot scarier.
Well, I think they understood the lesson more.
Yeah. It's also interesting that in Spearhead, you don't see the glass breaking, because, of course, the BBC couldn't afford to break the windows, but you do see them kill people.
Yes.
In this one, the glass breaks, but nobody ever dies.
They just fire a lot of people. And unfortunately, the Autons can't hit and kill Jackie.
Yeah, that is sad, isn't it?
Apparently they've gone to James Bond's full ability for shooting. And can't hit the broadside of a barn.
Yeah, well.
And Mickey is cowering and probably wetting himself at this point.
Yeah, there's a nice moment a little later where Mickey hugs Rose around the knees.
Yeah.
And I realized later that Father's Day, the 8th episode, repeats that when he's a little boy. Where he comes up and hugs her around the knees. I thought that was a nice little bit of continuity there.
And now we have little Autons.
Little Autons. That is a good
thing. That's pretty cool. I'll give them that.
Yeah. I went to,
I just wonder, looking at this, if everything breaking glass, if the Autons coming out and killing everyone and going berserk, maybe it goes on too long.
Yeah, I think it does. Spearhead's version is simpler, better.
It's short and quick, and you don't have time to dissect it. And go, that really doesn't.
Well, it keeps the shock value, whereas this just kind of goes on and on and on and on.
And you just have to wonder, you know, are they off on this?
I do think it's interesting. I went to Big Department Store the week after this aired, and I saw it. Big Department Store in Nashville, and they have really scary plastic mannequins in this department store that are very lifelike, even though they're white. I've never seen a flesh colored. Plastic mannequin in a store. They're always white. Really scary, and I kept waiting for them to come to life.
Until this point, the Autons have been killing everything in sight, but now three of them have opened their little gun ports and none have yet killed Jackie.
Yeah, and I think he actually, the bad directorial gaffe, he actually shows four guns opening, which is real nice.
And now Rose has swung and done her Buffy thing. And
there's the anti-plastic.
And Misty Consciousness is really upset about this.
I also thought it was very strange that the Nesting Consciousness can't speak English. I mean, it's obvious why, so we don't learn all about Time War, but it can manage to say one word in English, and that word is Time War.
Yes. And unfortunately, Jackie has survived the Autons invasion. You know, it would really have been cool. It's just somehow later they had shown Jackie being interviewed by someone from the unit about
that
this.
That would have been kind of nifty. It would have made the unit thing work better than anyways. I love
it. Well, there's so much debate about whether or not it was unit or not.
It was unit. It was in the script. We know that for sure. In fact, I know in the script that the female unit major is either Captain or Major Muriel Frost, who is from Doctor Magazine's comics. never mind the fact that, you know, she should be a different rank at this point, have red hair, be a different age, but
that is the same character.
It's all right. Yeah.
You know, she's a really crappy soldier. She's been runner hunt for years. So.
Yeah, well,
they promoted him.
I did think it was odd that he brought back unit for this, like, tiny little reference, made a big deal out of it, and then nothing.
Well, maybe they'll bring it back in full force for the Britain's invasion. Because it'd be you're gonna do it, you need to try and bring Nicholas Courtney back somehow. Well, not to run around and do anything, but maybe he's like the head of unit.
Yeah, so maybe.
You know, because he would be having to vouch for the doctor.
That's true. Yeah.
And here's Rose calling her mother on the cell phone. Cell phones play a lot of use in the show early on.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, yeah, end of the world. I thought we were going to get a call back home to Mom every episode.
I was hoping. I guess maybe Russell is friends with the woman who plays Jackie. I don't know.
I think she's some popular comedic actress in Britain. Sure, but I think she is.
And here's Mickey, he's obviously playing himself.
This slide.
Yeah, this is actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
The doctor invites Rose to go with him.
Yeah, and I like that line she just said, which is, you'd be dead if it wasn't for me. Which is very sweet. Really sold me, but I realized she really could act, and it was going to be good. But this is good, this whole inviting her thing.
And Mickey, of course, doesn't want to go.
Sure. And we don't want him to go either. So we're
not
happy.
Here to go either, but John Nathan Turner forced out on us, didn't he?
We're happy when the doctor says, you know, he's not black. I like how we're speaking in we. Like, you know, we represent all the fans of that album.
Yes. Oh, he's humming on it. That's so
okay. So we've trashed the episode. What do we like about it?
As the first episode, it was very good.
My
theory has always been, and you've heard this a million times, the way that you get to know a new doctor. You have to have a companion to meet him. And I think this does very well with establishing Rose, even though we know next to nothing about the new doctor.
Right.
We have 12 other episodes to learn more about it.
Right.
We do a good job of establishing Rose.
Mm-hmm.
We establish that the doctor can travel in space and time. And it brings it back and it's fun.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's
in
very
a fun
pacing.
Way. And it's not trying to be everything for everyone in TV for people.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't fall into that trap of let's have every continuity reference to the man.
So I think, you know, it did successfully reinvent Doctor Who.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, there are some weaknesses in the script and some character things and the pacing is off. But overall, I mean, I can't say that this is one that I lump up there with, you know, the same category as Time Flight. Which
right.
Is, you can see that they had maybe a good idea and they just couldn't do it.
Sure. No, I think it works very well for what it's supposed to be, which is that introductory episode. It's very funny. It's very friendly.
You know, and I can see why it was a big, huge hit. Everybody in the UK and everybody tuned in, and there was some enthusiasm about it.
Yep.
Of course, the next day, the news leaked out that Nicholson was leaving.
Yeah, we should talk about that in the next one.
Yes.
Even though it would have been more appropriate here, we'll talk about that in the metallic content.
Setting in the preview the first time. I saw it because they didn't have
a preview. Oh, right, no preview.
I saw it and watched the preview since then.
God, what's that depressing? You didn't get the 1 minute preview.
Yeah, I know. 3 weeks early and I missed the whole minute.
Damn.
I will give them credit for the previews. Early on, they only showed generally about the first 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, towards the end, they sort of got towards where they were. You
know, oh, yeah, show you the whole episode.
Well, the Daleks, you know, coming back in.
Bad Wolf.
They blew that surprise.
Yep.
It wasn't so much of a surprise of. It was the villain behind it as to when the Daleks were going to show up.
Which was the very end.
You know, the last 15 minutes, which
yeah.
are amazing.
Well,
and here's the credit.
Yeah, here's the credit. Should we maybe wrap it up until the next one?
So anyway, Rose, I give it a 7 out of 10.
That's fair. That's fair right there.
You know.
Yeah, 7.
So, and we're going to now pause and refill our drinks.
And
get more drunk
and
comment on Dalek.
Yeah, pretend it's a whole different day, because... You will wait till a different day, I'm sure, to listen to it.
Hopefully you'll forget. In between, like,
God, they suck.
Well, let's listen to the second one. And just in case you missed the first one, Nicola Bryant, give me a call. I'm just saying.
Billy, give me your phone number. I'll call you.
All right, well, the show's ending, so we should, too.